Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes you can work it out. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're forced to watch everything fall apart inside of your head. Sometimes leaving is easy. Sometimes it ain't. Sometimes it hurts to know the love in your head is slowly fading. Can say whatever you like, as long as we just say goodbye. Blame it on me, say it's my fault. Say that I left you outside in the cold with a broken heart. I really don't care.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Real Talk Radio. I am your host, Kay Sherelle, America's favorite Southern Belle, and I just would like to say thank you for joining me so bright and early on this Saturday morning. I hope that the adjustment to the time, 11:30, is a little bit more conducive for all of my listeners. You get an extra 30 minutes before it's time to roll over and join your girl on the air. So, today's segment, Why Black Women Are Alone. I don't really think this segment needs any other introduction than that, and I have to say that it has really sparked quite an interest from everyone. I tell you, you know, in the last few weeks building up to this show, it has been quite interesting. Several authors will join me this morning to discuss their books that have something to do with the topic. Definitely excited about that. The other thing that I am so excited about this morning is a special person will be rejoining us on air after many weeks of abandonment. You all remember my former dynamic co-host, Mr. Jordan Lamar. He is joining us this morning. Good morning, Jordan.
What up? What do you mean?
What
like,
are
it
you
ain't
doing?
It's not been that long, I promise you.
It has been a while. It has been a while. Listeners, tell him that it has been many a moon since we've heard from Jordan Lamar. I don't think we've heard from you since February.
Seriously? Well, I don't know.
Seriously?
Time flies by so fast.
Well, I am so excited that you decided to join us this morning, Why Black Women Are Alone. Jordan, what do you have to say?
That's a real controversial topic in the wording. I think you should have reworded that. Why single black women? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I mean, it said why black women are alone. And my question is, do they mean alone, or are they talking about the black women that are lonely? Like, how do you define that someone is alone?
Mm-hmm. I have no idea. Who is this author?
Well, it's actually three of them. Bullock, Douglas, and Scranton. Three guys wrote this book, and the title of the book is Why Black Women Are Alone, The Truth Revealed. This is the part that's sort of catchy to me, The Truth Revealed.
The truth.
I don't know about that one.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a tabloid, honestly, the way that this book is worded. You know what I'm saying? I'm not comfortable with it at all.
You're not what?
I said I'm not comfortable with the wording of it at all.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm definitely going to have to be there with you. I've had very mixed emotions about this segment and about the authors of the book, particularly because of the information that is written in it. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The other interesting book today, and I have to say that the title alone is so catchy, Don't Bring Home a Whiteboard by Karen Fallon. I don't know. This is definitely an interesting book.
Now, why would somebody say that, don't bring home a whiteboard? What's wrong with bringing home a whiteboard? I mean, personally, I wouldn't want my daughter day one because it's different. I'm not good with change, you know what I'm saying? But, like, if a woman want to date a whiteboard, I mean, that's her. That's her selection. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what to say about that. As long as the kids that they have don't end up being white boys, then that shit is driving me crazy.
As long as the kids don't grow up being white boys.
Yeah, I can't understand that.
What do you mean? I don't understand what you mean by that.
You don't understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, like, what do you mean, long as the kids don't end up being white boys? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, like, the kids will have to have some kind of, like, roots to them. You know what I'm saying? I want them to separate themselves away, you know what I'm saying, to the white side, I guess.
Okay. Well, you know, the book is about, you know, all of the things that I guess most black women hear their entire lives, and that is one of the things that is said. And I can honestly admit that was one of my mother's rules. Like, she had three main rules for us growing up. One of the rules was, don't bring home a boy or a girl with a gold tooth. The second rule, don't bring home a baby while you're in high school. And the third rule, don't bring home a white boy or a white girl. Those were her three rules. And I have to say that my older brother broke every last one.
Mm-hmm.
But those were her three rules. Like, you know, you hear the saying, can't use your cone, don't bring them home.
Wow.
So... So Karen is sort of going against that, talking about all of the, you know, just addressing all of the different notions that you hear as to why you should not bring home a white boy. So I don't know. Her book was very interesting, though. I would have to say that her book really did pull me in and say, it is a good book. I have not completely finished it because I am a bit of a slow reader. I have to completely digest and process what I am reading, but some of the things that she says, you know, as the reasons why black women say they don't date outside of their race, particularly why they don't date white guys, I would have to say that these are notions that I have either said myself or ones that I've heard my friends say. Like, for instance, notion 4, I don't find white men attractive. And, you know, I'm always at work, you know, talking about the different things I have going on and discussing it with friends of mine. And one of my friends, you know, she said something, and this is not, let me just say this right now, this is not at all meant to be offensive in any manner, but it's not directly at we don't find them attractive. But one of the things that I have frequently heard black women say is that, this is ugly, but I promise my listeners I do not mean this in an ugly way, is that they can't get past the smell. Because, you know, everybody has a smell. Everybody has a unique scent that, you know, I guess you can say is directly tied to their ethnicity. And that is one of the things that I so frequently hear. It's not necessarily that they don't find them attractive. It's just that their unique scent is something that they cannot get past.
Hey,
so,
sure. The smell.
I mean, this
is like, what's funny about that? I know what you're talking about. Because, like, oh my goodness, like, what's the deal? Like, it'll be at random times, like body musk. Okay, everybody has it, but at certain times, it just smells completely different.
Yes, exactly. And this is the thing. Like, okay, there is a scent, and, you know, it does come out at unique times, but I've noticed that particularly when people sweat or they get wet, the scent is heightened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, it magnifies or something. Like, you can almost, like, taste it or something. Like, it's just, like, ill. Like, I don't know. But that's not the topic.
I mean, no, that is not the topic. But, I mean, that is one of the things. And I will have to, you know, and that's sort of the thing. And it's, you know, you always kind of have to think about it. So, I don't know. But I just find it funny. But anyway, let's get back to you, Mr. Jordan Lamar. Why don't you tell us what's been going on with you? Because we have honestly missed you. We've missed you on air. You know, a little sad when you left us so abruptly. No goodbye. You know, no see you later. You just cut us off like a stood-up prom date. We were waiting with our corsage, and you never showed. Scarred us for life.
What can I say? I'm the heartbreaker. I don't know. Like, just got out of school or whatever class. Well, I've been out for a couple of weeks now. It's just that I've been trying to scramble, find a place to stay so I can stay up here in this beautiful Kentucky weather.
Is the weather beautiful in Kentucky? It is a little bit cloudy in Atlanta, I would have to say. It's a little bit cloudy.
This is what's crazy. Like, I have a lot of contact in Georgia. So, when I'm up here, it be, like, storming. It'll, like, you know what I'm saying, like the same thing. And a couple days later, it'll be in Atlanta. That's amazing to me. I don't know. There's just the simple things in life that amazes me.
Really? The simple things amaze you? How wonderful.
Yeah.
How wonderful. So it's good that you are doing well. You say classes ended.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're not going to get into your classes because usually when people don't volunteer the information, there is a reason why. But let me ask you this. Have you heard that your girl, Kay Sherrill, say what?
Never mind. Go ahead. Go on.
No, I'm just saying this because, you know, I interact with teenagers all day. And when they come down to the room on, like, a grading report day or finals and they don't come in and they don't volunteer their grades, is usually a reason why they don't volunteer to tell me how the semester ended. Like, my daughter came by yesterday. I think it was yesterday she came by my room. And no, I don't have children. This is not my biological daughter. All my listeners were like, she lied. No, this is a child that basically she adopted me as her mother. But anyway, she came by my room, and scores had recently came out. Their CRCT scores, for those of you in Georgia, know that it's all the rave about the CRCT. And she volunteered the information that she passed reading and math. And I was like, okay, what about the other subjects? And so she went on to tell me that it was science, I want to say, that she told me she did not pass, but she passed everything else. And so usually when, you know, things like that aren't volunteered, there's a reason. That's why I made that comment.
Hold on. That wasn't a comment. That was a short story comparing a teenager to me. Like, how did you compare a teenager to me? Like, these are two completely different time zones. Like, seriously. Did you really just give a short story about it?
No, I gave you the premise for the comment. That is all. And that, but I'm just saying that is typical. I gave that one because that one directly goes into school, you know, different forms of school, but it's still school. So, no, I gave that just because that is typically how it goes. I've sort of noticed that with everyone, you know, when there are big things going up and sometimes they volunteer and they don't. That's all I was saying. Jordan, don't fight with me on the air, love. You know, Kay Sherrill loves you. Don't behave that manner. You have the listeners ready to beat you up. You know my listeners love me.
I ain't going to do that on the air, but I love your listeners too.
But, you know, you took me all through that, and you know how my mind, back to where I was going. You know that there is a new show, that I do have a new show that will start sometime in June. Have you heard? You have your ear to the ground and hear the earth-shattering news?
What's the earth-shattering news?
That I will have a new show on Sunday evenings called After Dark with Kay Sherrill.
Oh, look at you.
Yes, After Dark with Kay Sherrill. Like, I'm very excited about this new show that is coming up because I get to be a different person. Well, not a different person, but, you know, you get to, my listeners will really get to see a different side of me. So those of you who are avid Kay Sherrill listeners and lovers, After Dark with Kay Sherrill is a new show that will be a part of Magic Groove, and Magic is spelled with a J, not a G, MAJICGROVE.com, Magic Groove, on Sunday evening starting at 9 p.m. So definitely stay tuned, and when I have the exact date of that, I will let you know, but I'm very excited. I'm very excited because they allowed me to pick my time and pick what type of show I wanted to do. You know, it was very different than being told, like, okay, this is what time your show we're, and, you know, this is the type of show we're looking for. They're like, okay, have fun with it, you know, make it your own. So I am also excited about that. After Dark. After Dark, you know, when the street lights come on and that was the time that your mama told you you had to be home.
Well, I don't know. I ain't had a curfew in a long time. Like, seriously, I don't even remember that.
You probably didn't have a curfew when you were in school.
Yeah.
Silence.
I think I did. It probably was
that
like
what?
12 or something. I think it was like 12 or something like that.
Did you break curfew often? You seem like the type that would just break curfew.
No, I didn't break curfew. Well, yeah, I mean, I did, but at least, I would call my parents. Like, okay, I'm going to be a couple minutes late, like 30 minutes or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always let them know, but, I mean, yeah, I broke curfew sometimes. Who's never broke curfew? Like, seriously, think about that.
I never broke curfew.
Whatever. Yeah, you were sneaking out the window. Your parents didn't know that you broke curfew.
I was not, oh my God, you did not just say that. I was not sneaking out of windows. Like, honestly, I was a good girl. I was terrified of getting in trouble. Like, that honestly was the thing. I did not break curfew because I believed my parents when they told me that they would kill me. I really did believe them. I mean, they weren't that attached to me anyway. You know, I wasn't the favorite, so, you know, knocking me out would have been okay. They had their boy to keep the name going.
Wow. You really just on the air. You are like, oh, goodness. There's not a word to describe it. Kim Possible.
You know what? That is so funny. Did you know that's one of my nicknames?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, people at work call me Kim Possible just because, I don't know, because I'm always saying failure is not an option. I take on every task full steam ahead, like charge. This is sad, though. Let me tell you my sad news. I got my third rejection of the week yesterday, my third rejection. I mean, how much rejection can a girl take in 1 week? That's what I want to know. My first rejection came from Poetry Magazine, and they didn't even read my work. I'm pretty sure of that because no comments were made on the work. You can sort of tell if people have actually read your work or not when they reject you by the comments they make, but no comments were made. They just were like, we're sorry, but we're not accepting your work at this time. Good day. So then the second rejection came from Mendu Books and Green Brown Mall. She called to tell me that they would not be carrying my book in the store because they already have a surplus of poetry books in store and that I can reapply to have my book carried in the next 6 months if I would like. And yesterday, Slice Magazine sliced right into my heart and my dreams and said that they would not be using any of my work in their magazine and to have a good day.
Well, I guess rejection is just preparing you for acceptance. How about that? One day you will get in there and you won't even have people, stores will be calling you trying to get you to give them your book.
Yeah, you know, I can agree with you on that, and that was one of the things that I originally said when I got my first rejection email. I put on Twitter that, you know, got my first rejection email and that I would probably frame it because it's very motivational because I'm like, no. You don't tell me no. Like, anyone that has known me for a while knows that I do not like to hear the word no. I do not like to hear the word no. You will not tell me no. You will accept me and love it. What were you saying?
That sounds kind of insane. Like, you kind of, you will not tell me no. 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 You will not tell me.
That's how I feel, though. I do not like people telling me no. I do not at all. I'm always saying, you will not tell me no. How dare you just tell me no? I can't accept rejection at all. Like, I'm just like, no, okay, you're saying no now. So tell me, what will it take to make you say yes?
You just gave away your secrets. You can't do that. Like, you know how vulnerable that makes you? That's ridiculous. Seriously.
How does that make me vulnerable by saying I don't like to accept no?
No, what was the last statement you made? You know what I'm saying? What would it take for me? What do I have to do in order to get you to say yes?
That's how I approach it. I'm talking about work. What are you talking about? is how, you know, even when you go on job interviews, okay, this is the thing, huh? What?
The industry is a dog-eat-dog world, seriously.
Well, you know, this is how I approach everything with the objective of this will be accomplished. That is how I tackle everything. And so, you know, going on a job interview, and especially if it's a job interview that I know that I am not fully qualified to take, you know, it's a job that, you know, I have some of the qualities, the attributes that they're looking for, but I don't possess all of them. So I go in and let's talk about it. You know, I'm going to directly address my shortcomings. But then I'm going to offer a plan on how I can, you know, overcome these shortcomings. Or even if they bring it up in the interview and saying, well, you know, we're looking for someone who has, you know, this many years of experience, but you only have a few months. Okay, now you're telling me that this is about to be, you know, in this area, this is a no. So let's turn this no into a yes. How, you know, you think you want someone with more experience, but you haven't talked to me about it yet, so you're not fully aware that we can overcome this and we can make this into a positive. It is better that I have less experience because it makes me more trainable. You will not tell me no.
You just sold that to me, so I guess you do manage to change people's minds, okay? Well, I mean, do it. Hey, Sherelle in the house. Shout out.
Definitely, definitely. So, I mean, I don't know. But let's get back to the subject of the day, why black women are alone. I don't know. I find it funny that black women are the only people on earth that are alone and nobody else is. Everyone else has someone and we're alone. That's, I don't know. Something about that statement just seems a little bit tainted to me. I'm just not ready to accept that or believe that. And I think that the other difference needs to be they need to address some women are, I guess you would say, alone. I don't like the term alone. Some women are single by choice. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being single by choice. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's really nothing wrong with being single, and it's not your choice either. That's the way I view it, because everything has a time and a season, and maybe this is just not your time, and definitely just not accepting any guy that comes around just because you don't want to be, quote-unquote, alone or single. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't know, Jordan. Am I wrong in my thinking? Help me out, because I know if no one else will, you will set me straight.
I wouldn't say there's anything in particular wrong with it. I mean, if a woman wants to be alone, she shall. You know what I'm saying? But, like you said, everything has a time and a season. It might not be the right time for her to be in a particular relationship. You know what I'm saying? With a guy, maybe her man hasn't came up. Everybody is destined to be with somebody. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. I don't know. Where's it coming from?
I don't know. Listeners, do we want to pry into Jordan's love life at this time, or are we going to leave him alone today? I'm afraid if we pry today, he might not ever join us again. And, you know, the formal is coming up, and we definitely would like to have a date, wouldn't we, listeners? So maybe we'll leave that alone. Maybe. I haven't decided yet. I don't know. I'm wondering, though, would someone consider me alone, or am I single? Honestly, though, that is really big to me, because one woman did say, she's like, how do you determine that I am alone? Because I am not legally married, does that make me alone? She's like, but I am not lonely, so I don't consider myself alone. If you're talking about marital status, I am single.
Yeah. I guess women being alone is a problem for a guy, especially if the woman is, like, beautiful. Like, I mean, me being the type of person, I don't really like the idea of a beautiful woman who choose to be alone, because it's kind of messed up for the guys who are actually looking for a woman with her head on straight. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of messed up. Like, dykes, too, that kind of breaks through hard sometimes. You know, so I'd be like, dang, you beautiful. Why you can't just come back? You know what I'm saying? That type of thing. But I don't know, if you choose to be alone,
Let's go back to what you said. Did you say it breaks your heart to see a beautiful woman alone? So those that are not beautiful, the ugly women, it's okay if they're alone?
No, it's not okay. I'm not saying that at all. I mean, when I say beautiful, I'm not talking about just looks, okay? Like, when I use the word beautiful, I'm talking about inside, outside, I mean, everything about them, like a woman, you know what I'm saying? There's a difference between just saying a girl and a woman, you know what I'm saying, a woman. I see those two different types of people.
Okay. I feel you now. I'm like, okay, what do you mean by that? And so, I don't know. It's interesting that you say that bothers you to see one that is alone. Because I sort of, and this is, okay, and maybe this is wrong. Let me give this little basis right now. Maybe I am wrong in saying this, and if I am, please call me and tell me about myself. 646-595-4522 is the guest call-in number for Real Talk Radio, or send me an email to realtalk@shirelleinc.com. But this is what I say, and I say this because of my aunt. Anytime there's a woman who is so beautiful and she is alone, it's for a reason. And I wholeheartedly believe that. Even when it comes to certain celebrities, I'm like, anything that pretty that's alone, there's a reason for it, honestly. And maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but quite often it's true.
Well, yeah, I agree on that. I mean, everybody's self-esteem level is not going to be nearly close, you know what I'm saying, in the same area. Because, like, you have those uppity women that are beautiful, that what, you know what I'm saying, that you just want, you know what I'm saying, who got the CEO job and beautiful, got good relationship that you have with them, but if something is wrong with them, if they're on, you know what I'm saying, if they by themselves, like, hold on, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Mental issues or something, you know what I'm saying?
That is definitely one of the things. And, you know, the thing about it is I hear that all the time. Like, on a weekly basis, I am approached by some guy who feels like he is going to change my life. And, you know, if we even get into the part of engaging in dialogue, and it's kind of where I start to talk about some of the things that I am doing, or he talks about what he's doing and this whole thing, and then it's like, oh, you don't have children? Oh, you have a real job? Well, why, you know, I don't understand why you're alone. What's, you know, like, how come no one has swooped you up and that sort of thing? And I guess thinking about it in reverse of what I said, but, I mean, I know why, you know, my situation is what it is, but I don't know. I just always find it interesting that's sort of like the response, sort of along the lines of what you said about, you know, you don't like to see that, and that's always what I'm hearing. It's like, you know, I can't believe that, you know, someone hasn't swooped you up and married you yet. I mean, I'm what you need in your life. I'm going to do it. I don't know. It's funny. Did I go completely off then?
I would say you go off and you just switch sides. That's what it is.
I switch sides.
Yeah, that's all you did.
Okay. Well, right now, I definitely see a caller on the line. So, caller, I am coming to you, 6109. I am coming to you now, so I hope you are ready. Good morning. You're on the air with Kay Sherelle. This is Real Talk Radio, and we're joined this morning by Jordan Lamar. Who am I speaking with?
It's Karen Folan, Kimberly.
Oh, good morning. I did not recognize the number. It was different than the other I had signed. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm sorry about the number change. My cordless phone wasn't charging, and when I picked it up to call you, it died immediately. So I had to switch. Sorry about that.
Oh, that is perfectly okay. I understand. That happens to me at least once a week.
Not when you're conducting an interview normally, though, right? So I apologize about that.
That is no problem. So glad that you could join me this morning. I have to say, I have found your book to be very interesting. I am sad to say that I am a bit of a slow reader, and so a week was not quite enough time for me to finish, but I have gotten into it. Your introduction really pulled me in. This book is very, very interesting. I am enjoying it.
Thank you. I enjoyed writing it, and, you know, the introduction is my own personal journey with this whole question of interracial dating and ultimately for me, interracial marriage, because, you know, mine is a love story that ended with the altar, so, and the family and the whole nine yards, so,
Yes, definitely. That was one of the things, because when I actually went back and I YouTube you, and yes, that is an actual term, people. I YouTubed you and saw your interview on CNN, and when you addressed that, I was like, okay, now, you know, I get it more. I get more of what's going on here with this book, and that is, you know, I would like to say that I am happy that you actually wrote this book, because it is a different side of the story, and the fact that you are actually, in an interracial marriage, that, you know, that definitely gives the other side of the story, where you talked about how you had, you know, some preconceived notions and you sort of went around them, overcame them. So definitely great.
Well, I think, you know, the book, if you saw the CNN interview, you know that the title is really the first thing for a lot of people, kind of puts them off, makes them think that maybe I'm saying something I'm not, because the title is Don't Bring Home a White Boy, and then the small print underneath it is And Other Notions That Keep Black Women from Dating Out. And if you just hear the title, Don't Bring Home a White Boy, it's sort of like, whoa, what is this woman saying? Well, yeah, that's the title, but I actually did bring one home, and the title comes from that. Something that I think a lot of black women are told, or if they're not told it directly, it's something that you kind of absorb in the culture and in the community, that, you know, since integration, we can go to school with them, we certainly work with white people, we often live in neighborhoods where there's a mix of folks, but certainly people who were born around the time I was were told that's all fine and good, but when it comes to marrying and when it comes to dating, don't bring one home. And that has applied, or some certainly, to black women, I think, in large numbers. But even black men have heard, you know, if they can't use our comb, don't bring them home. Or I've heard many a black mother say, you know, please don't bring home a white girl, and that kind of thing. So it's certainly a community notion. But black men, all of the census numbers show, have overcome it at a much greater rate than black women. And I think right now it's something like 14% of married black men are married outside of the race, compared to only 4% of black women. So that sort of disparity certainly plays a role in why many black women are complaining that all the good ones are married and all the good ones are married to white women, and that certain level of resentment that you hear about, you know, Every time I see a black man with a white woman, I wince, that Jill Scott wrote about in the Essence magazine last month, and those kinds of issues. So I really, given that I was, you know, involved with a white guy, and I had heard all of this stuff, I really wanted to write a book and try to understand all of these notions, all of these ideas that kind of make us among the last groups to consider dating interracially. And so that was the motive behind the book, and what I tried to tackle is, you know, why? What is with that don't bring home a white boy? Why have we heard that? What are some of the reasons that all of us have heard that keep us from even thinking about white men as even a possibility, and are they really true? So, hence the book.
Well, I mean, you said something interesting. I want to go back to, you said that Jill Scott made a comment that every time she sees a black man with a white woman, she went.
Yeah, she wrote a piece for Essence magazine last month, and that was kind of the upshot of it, yeah.
Jordan, you're like the biggest Jill Scott fan I know. Did you know she made that statement? How do you feel about that?
No, I didn't know she made that statement. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I think, I'm not sure, like, didn't Jill Scott just go through a divorce or something? Something like that. I don't know what's wrong with the white guy, you know what I'm saying? Like, she, you know what I'm saying, skin crawling or whatever the statement was or whatever. But I don't know.
I don't know. I'm wondering, though, you said 14%, Karen, of black men are interracially married compared to 4% of women. I'm wondering, though, if this has to attribute to the celebrities, because a great deal of, you know, affluent black men are married outside of their race, particularly when you look at athletes. And I'm wondering if this is part of what is making things okay for them. That's what I'm wondering. If maybe,
well, you know, the population of actors, successful actors and athletes, is such a minute one of the entire population. That, while it certainly might have some role, I don't know that it can account for that disparity well enough. And, you know, there are actually a lot of celebrity black women who are linked with white men. It's just that you don't see as much about those couples, and there's certainly a sort of media imbalance there that is, to me, very interesting, as, you know, you see the Heidi Klum and Seal kind of couple, but you don't know that George Lucas, the Star Wars creator, is dating Melanie Hobson, who is always an NBC News correspondent on Money and Finance, and she's on every week, and they're a couple, and they have been for years. And so to me, that's interesting that you don't see those kinds of power couples in the same way. It makes me question kind of still, who is shaping the way black women appear in the media? And to me, that's a really big and very important question that we still have to be asking, because who is shaping that image is telling us all what black women in America are about. And to me, and, you know, I don't know if you've got this far in the book yet, Kimberly, but, you know, that's part of the problem here, is that the image is still, you know, oversexed, booty-shaking, rap video kind of porn image that has nothing to do with women like you and like me and like Melanie and like the First Lady. And, like, you know, there are just so many more of us who are just average, everyday, working hard, taking care of ourselves, taking care of our families, going to church, you know, working out at the gym, everyday people. And that's not the image that gets sent around the world of us a lot of the time. And as long as there's an image that's circulating that portrays us somehow as less desirable for whatever, in whatever way you take that, or overly desirable, which is also inaccurate, that presents us with dating problems both inside the race and outside of it. So, and I heard a little bit of what you all were talking about just before I called in, and that's exactly what you were saying. You're saying, you know, people are assuming all these things about who I am, and when I tell them, no, that's not who I am, they act like, oh, well, you're the exception. No, I'm not the exception. I'm the rule. The exception is all of this garbage that the media is circulating about who we are, and how do we take control of that image and reshape it so that who I am is the exception and is what you think of when you think black American woman.
Yeah, Exactly. That is exactly. That is the whole thing, the exception and the rule. And I do get tired of being addressed as the exception when I am the rule, because I have many, many girlfriends that are exactly like me. And I would say that probably the thing that gets us the most frowned from guys is our inability, well, not necessarily our inability, but our unwillingness to settle.
If you recall, you know, there's a chapter in the book about the good black man and the list that so many women have. And, you know, I'm a little critical of the list in the book I talk about. To me, the only real list that matters isn't things like what he does and you know, what he looks like, that are the things that a lot of women do get hung up on. The thing that matters in the list to me is what kind of person is he. White, black, Asian, Latino, if he's an a-hole, he's an a-hole. And no good-looking, no, you know, great job, money, whatever, fancy car, none of that fixes the fact that men who are not good people make bad partners, period. So that's the only thing, the only things that should be on our list ultimately are the contents of his character. You know, what kind of qualities do we want a man to have? And you remember in my introduction, when I started my manhunt, after being divorced for several years and realizing, you know, hey, I'm getting older. If I want to be married again, I probably should put this toward the top of my list, not at the bottom, not at the unimportant, you know, stage, but really make an effort here. One of my good friends said, make a list of only qualities. And the catch is that they have to be the same qualities that you have. You cannot ask for anything from another person that you do not embody in yourself, because otherwise the relationship is imbalanced. She was coming from a sort of spiritual point of view, which is not unlike the verse in the Bible that says, don't be unequally yoked. And certainly if you're talking about character and qualities in another person, you are definitely going to be unequally yoked if you're asking for someone to be either a better person or a worse person or have different values than you do. So that was the major thing that guided my manhunt. And I hate to put it like a hunt, because it really wasn't. It was more like, though, making this a priority again, to date again. When I met the man who is my current husband, and I realized, here I am focusing on how pale he is. And, you know, Kimberly, you've read it, certainly. In that introduction I talk about, there was him, and I really looked at him, and I went, I don't know if I can do this. Because of us are visual, and there is sort of like there is an idea that you have in your head about what your partner is going to look like, and I certainly wasn't any different from any other woman or man with that. But there was a moment when I just thought, you know, it's not that he's ugly, he's not ugly, he's just not the type that I thought. Even for a white guy, I had a type thought about what he would look like. He's very Irish. And he's older, and he has white hair and very pale skin that gets very red in the sun. He never tans. It's, you know, the pale, watery blue eyes. I mean, I've joked that if you go to the dictionary and you look up the man, my husband's picture is there. I mean, he just looks like the stereotype of a white guy that I was like, I don't know. And I thought to myself, you know, this is really silly. You have a nice time with him. Just go and keep getting to know him, and don't be stupid about this. He's a nice guy. Go. And in the end, what I realized is he has all of the qualities that were on that list. He is all of the things that make a partner for me, because he has all of those qualities and characteristics that I wrote and that I wanted in a partner, and we've been married 6 years now, and for the most part, it's a good relationship. I mean, certainly like every couple, we have our moments, but those moments are very, very rare. And once I have thought to myself, wow, I almost let this get away because I was caught up in externals.
and caught up on the idea in my mind about what he should look like instead of thinking about what he should be like to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I definitely found that to be the most interesting thing, and this is something that I have discussed before in classes and things about making the list. Because I really relate to in your introduction when you discussed the list, because you talked about how, you know, you wrote down some things, and as you really went through and evaluated, you were like, okay, you know, some things did not belong on the list. And
mm-hmm.
you put others on, and that is very true, and I can relate to that directly because I have had to revise my list as well, and I noticed that with the list, you really do end up finding someone that matches what you have on your list if you are genuine when you write your list. And I think that part of that is because it comes to your conscious mind when you are actually out dating. Because in my revision of my list, one of the things that I noticed once I met someone was that I did not put age on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I found that, you know, I always make the joke, you know, God has a sense of humor. I say, because I didn't put age on there, and he decided to sort of make me laugh about the fact that I didn't later on when I met someone. But I think that what you said about, you know, only putting things on the list that you have is a great way to say it, because one of the things that so often I hear women say is that, it, you know, the man has to have a lot of money. And my response is, do you have a lot of money?
That's absolutely right. And, you know, that goes to the whole perception, certainly in interracial relationships, is that it's about some sort of economic trade-off. Oh, you married him because you have money. He has money. You know, when you see a sister with a white guy, that's one of the things that sometimes gets whispered or sometimes even said directly is, you know, does he have money? That kind of thing. And that's the only reason that you would do this is because there's some sort of economic trade-off. And actually what's interesting, at least as far as black women and white men are concerned, is usually those are some of the most financially successful couples of all, simply because usually they both have the same level of income potential or income realization. In other words, it's like attracts like most often. More often, there's an income disparity when you see white women marrying outside of their race. And, you know, I'm not trying to cause any trouble, but there is data that suggests that sometimes lower income white women will marry black men or Asian men or men of other cultures as a way to achieve middle class. So it's like marrying up. He's a man from another culture with cash. She's a lower class white woman, and it's a way of marrying up. That's something that doesn't get talked about. Instead, you see the accusation being pointed at black women, and it's not usually true for black women. So again, a lot of this for me has been an exploration in, gosh, you know, who is telling these stories? Where are the stories coming from? Who is shaping the stories? I want to shape this story because I want to lay out what the truth is. And the truth is that a lot of this stuff, that this cultural baggage that we've been laying on certain interracial relationships but not discussing it in other circumstances really needs to be addressed.
Yes. You know, I definitely want to ask you, let's talk about some of the notions you address in your book, because that is one of the things that we were discussing before you came on air. I don't know if you've heard it or not. We were discussing your notion four, but what are some of the notions that you say that keep black women from dating interracially?
Well, you know, I think the one that most people enunciate right off the bat is slavery and the history between black women and white men in this country. But among them are certainly everything from, you know, I don't find white men attractive, or, you know, they're not interested in us. Those are two that are also fairly high on the list of things that are will come out fairly quickly. The notion of what about the children, being concerned that they'll be placed in a position where they'll be accepted by neither group. Concerns about being perceived as a sellout, and no longer a part of the black community for having made that choice or made the choice to cross over, and even the language that we use sometimes suggests that somehow you're no longer a part of the community. All of those are kind of like in the top five. But I've also heard people say things about, you know, you know, black women are just on the bottom. They're on the bottom all over the world, which is not true. And there's plenty of evidence to suggest certainly that black American women around the world are perceived as Americans first, and as Americans have a higher status maybe than they even perceive themselves having in this country, which is, you know, very interesting. When you talk to black American women who live abroad, they have such a different experience that it's really an argument for all of us being better educated and traveling more so that we know the context of our experience across the entire globe. So those are some of the notions that are among the most common ones, but I did take apart 9 of them, 10 of them, yeah. Oh, we'd be too different. That's something else, you know, that he won't understand my culture. He won't know what it means to be black, and it'll just be harder. So, you know, and again, go ahead.
I said that one I do hear a lot, that one about he will not understand me, he won't understand the struggles and things that I experience as, you know, as being a black woman in this country, and I will be forever explaining my experience, explaining my feelings to him.
Right, yeah, I that's certainly something that people say, but here's the problem. The black divorce rate right now is 50% and rising. And so very clearly, just having two black partners is not any kind of guarantee that anybody's going to understand anybody any better than the odds are in any relationship across the board. Interestingly, a very recent study on interracial relationships has now determined that it matters what kind of couple you are in the sense of the composition. And you know, normally what had been believed is that interracial couples have a worse divorce rate than same-race couples. But it turns out that black women who marry out generally have a better success rate than same-race couples, even white same-race couples, better than white same-race couples. Why? Part of it comes back to what I said about money. Black women are achievers. As a group, that's the message that ought to be out there about us that for some reason isn't. But as a group, we tend to work hard and work well at trying to stabilize our families. And white men have the same reputation for taking care of their families. So here you have two groups of people who have a similar reputation and ethic as far as family. And then the second reason might just be because of all of the differences and the need to communicate through them and the need to, this is how I see it, this is how you see it. How do we navigate that so that we can present a united front against everybody else? They have a higher rate of mutual communication than same-race couples because they've got both gender and race to navigate. They have to work harder. And if they're able to even get to marriage vows, the chances are good that they'll be able to stay married, if that makes any sense. Just because, again, you're working against all of that gender stuff. Men and women don't understand each other to start with, so how do we deal with that? And then the racial stuff, how do we understand each other across that? And if you can find ways that you can actually unite and communicate and work together before you even get to marriage, by the time you get to marriage, the chances are good that that's going to be a successful union. And that's exactly what this study ended up finding, is that, you know, when black women do reach across the cultural divide and find someone with whom they can communicate, it works.
Okay. You know, I can definitely agree with everything that you just said, because as you were talking, I was thinking, and I had the thought about communication, and then you address that, and if you do have to, you have all of these things against you, and now you got to work around them, that means that if you're going to get around them, you do have to communicate more, and communication, regardless of race, is one of the biggest factors that keeps a couple together or pulls them apart.
Yeah, and I think maybe sometimes for same-race couples, that doesn't happen as well, and that probably contributes in large part to the divorce rate, is you know, there's a lack of that ability to and desire to truly connect with each other, and that's a problem. That's something we all have to work on.
Yeah, too often I think that maybe things are taken for granted, and in if you are both, you know, the same race and you have all of these other attributes that are the same, you just sort of take it for granted or assume that this person should just automatically get you. And
right.
The communication doesn't take place, and so when you have these barriers in place, you have no choice but to address them, because if you don't, they begin to wedge you apart. So I can definitely agree with that. I want to ask you, though, is there anything wrong with a black woman just preferring to have a black man?
No, of course not. There's nothing wrong with any of our preferences, as far as I'm concerned. You could prefer anything you want. But, I think for me, it's the problem with our preferences does tend to be that they exclude, whether we mean for them to or not. They exclude people who might be good for us. And that's something to be aware of when we assert our preferences. And, I just think we have to be careful with them, men and women. Having a preference for a certain look or a certain type or a certain kind of person does tend to exclude other types and looks and people that, who knows? So, no, I'm not criticizing anybody's preference, but I do want them to be aware of what preferences do.
But, you know what, and this is what's interesting is that, as I would say that overall with the blacks that I have had encounters with are very comfortable with excluding a man simply because he is white, but would be highly offended if it was in reverse and the white man excluded you because you're black. We would then be highly offended.
Yeah, that is true. And yes, and we can debate all day long whether that's racist, a reaction to racism, or, some other thing, phenomenon altogether based on the realities of how race operates in this culture and how, white privilege works and all of that. And, that's certainly a conversation we could have. But at the end of the day, we all do have a responsibility to accept and acknowledge that, one way or the other, we're all on this planet together. We're all human beings. We're all really only a few genomes away from each other. And that language that tends to divide us in one way or the other ultimately does just that, divide us. And I would just, without trying to minimize, because I can't, because I see it too much, how white privilege works and that it does exist, I just would encourage people to realize that, when you lump any group of people into a category without giving them any opportunity to prove themselves as individuals, you can't really bitch when it happens to you, because that's dangerous and damaging. It just is, and it's not fair. Let's judge them on what they do and what they say and how they behave, not as groups.
Okay. Well, definitely. That's always my thing. Please, judge me off of what I say and do directly. Don't put me into a category with a bunch of other people and judge me off of that, because so often your judgment will be wrong.
That's absolutely right, and that's, as I said, when I dialed in and I heard you talking, that's exactly what you were saying, is I'm sick to death of people saying, oh, you must be this, this, and this because you're a black woman. No, excuse me, and it's the same thing for anyone else, is we really do have to be careful with that, because it creates unfair divisions, and it creates categories of people that, when they're applied to us, we don't appreciate it.
No, we don't. Definitely do not. Let me ask you, Karen, do you really think, or have you seen it to the fact that you would say that white men are basically lining up to date black women? Because I hear so many black women say that white men aren't interested in them.
Yeah, I hear that too. And all I can say about that is there are two things. Number one, the census says 8% of white men marry interracially, which is not a huge number. However, because there are about, nearly 100 million white men, something like that, 8% is still a fairly significant number compared to our mere of black women. There's about 8% of us in the entire United States. I think that comes to something like 20 million or something like that. Maybe a little bit less than that. So it's a substantial number who are supposedly available or interested, or who are marrying outside of their race. And it does, it's important to know that, because when we start talking about, you know, so many black women being single and not wanting to be, and on and on and on, that's a substantial enough group to make a difference if we're all starting to notice each other and talk more to each other as romantic possibilities. Now, as far as the interest goes, I get a lot of mail from white guys who are saying, I've been interested, there are black women in my office that I've tried to approach, and, you know, I get the feeling that I'm going to be rebuffed, so I don't say anything. Obviously, that's not a national study that proves anything. All I can tell you is that's the mail I get. And that the women that I interviewed for this book, the one thing that they all had in common, the ones who were either dating or married interracially, was that they were willing. And they saw themselves as women first, and they did not have in their mind, oh, he's not going to be interested in me, they're not lining up to date me. They were like, hey, I'm a woman, he's a man, what? And that attitude of, I see myself as attractive regardless, seems to work for them. So I can't help but wonder if, by holding the idea that they're not interested in us, we're inadvertently sending some sort of signal that says, I'm not interested in you, so don't approach. I don't know the answer to that question. All I know is, if we're willing to be open to it, somehow that does seem to we attract it. That's all.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
It does. It definitely does. Well, Karen, we are running out of time on this interview. I have to tell everyone, if you have not picked up your copy of her book, Don't Bring Home a White Boy, the title alone should make you want to pick up the book. I am definitely going to continue reading because, like I said, I find the book to be very interesting. It's very honest. I will have to say that it, not only is it well-written, but it's extremely honest, because these are many things that I know that me and my girlfriends have discussed. These are things that I have heard growing up. At the top of the show, I said my mother had three rules when it came to us. One rule, no gold teeth. She didn't want us to date or bring home anyone with a gold tooth. That was her rule. The second rule, no babies in high school. And the third rule, don't bring home a white boy or a white girl. Those were her three rules for us.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother broke all three. He did not marry outside of his race, but he was the only who brought one home for her to meet once, and that was very funny. So I think I'm on Notion 5, so I'm about halfway through, and I'm definitely going to finish it. It is great. You have an event going on in Atlanta this weekend, correct?
Yes, I'll be there tomorrow at Vino Librio on Garrett Street in Southeast. It's an event called Free Your Mind, and I'll be talking about the book, and I'll have some copies for sale. It starts at 3 o'clock, and you can find out more information by going to blackgirltravel.com/Folan, F-O-L-A-N. So I hope to see some of your listeners there tomorrow.
Yes, I'm definitely going to try to come. I love Vino Libre. It is cute little wine bar. Very cute. I love it.
Good. I'm looking forward to going there, too.
I know. So I'm definitely going, if I can get it in my schedule, to come out tomorrow and check it out. All of the listeners, definitely please tomorrow at 3, go meet Karen, buy a copy of the book. It is a great read. Thank you so much, Karen, for joining me this morning. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
All right, Kimberly, thanks so much.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, right about now, it is time to switch to our second book of the day, all going along with the same topic, and this book is titled Why Black Women Are Alone, The Truth Revealed. And those of you who joined us at the top of the hour on Real Talk Radio, Jordan and I were discussing this book. Unfortunately, Jordan had to leave us before we get to the second part of the show, but I am definitely ready to go ahead and discuss this book. So right now we are going to be joined by Bullard and Douglas, co-authors of the book. Good afternoon. You're on Real Talk Radio. Can you hear me?
Hey, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who am I speaking with? I heard one voice, I think.
Can you hear me?
Jack Williams Douglas.
This is Hank Ballard.
Oh, how you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear both of you.
Okay, good.
How you doing? This is Jack Williams Douglas.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Jack Quez. I'm not exactly sure where you guys are calling from, but it is a cloudy afternoon in Atlanta.
We're calling from Memphis. Well, it's actually 11:30 in the morning where we are. We're just waking up.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we've been on the air now for about an hour. Where are you calling from?
Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis, Tennessee. That's where we live.
Oh, okay, Tennessee. Okay. Well, you know, we don't have all afternoon. I'm sure we could talk about this book all afternoon, but I just definitely want to start with the question, why?
Why? What made us write it?
Why write the book?
Yes. Why? Why did you write this book?
Well, as I said before, this is Hank, by the way. I said that so many female friends I've had have always come to me with questions about why do men do this? Why do men do that? And I try to give them as raw and honest answers as I possibly can. And sometimes it's gotten me in trouble, and I've gotten, you know, a lot of backlash for it, but I kind of figure, you know, why not write a book from a male's perspective explaining truly why men act the way we act? It's not politically correct. It's not polite. It's not watered down in any way. I just want it to really be raw and explicit. You know, it's kind of like a final answer as to why men act this way, and let women deal with it any way they choose.
Well, this is my question, because I've had very mixed emotions as I began reading the book, and I've sort of been back and forth about as far as continuing on with finishing the book and conducting the interview, because I would have to say that you said that you wrote it in a very raw sense, and I would say that the grammar and the words are extremely raw in the book, the book really sounds angry.
Well, there is. I attest to that. There's a lot of anger in the book. There's a lot of frustration, you know, that came from a lot of black men that I've talked to about how they feel about certain situations, how they feel about black women and the situations they've been in. And I think it's an emotional book that I wanted to get put on paper. I didn't want to put the technical side of everything in the book. You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to be, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, as I said, politically correct and miss out on it. I wanted people to know, I wanted black women to know the frustration of black men and the anger of black men. So, yeah, I'll agree it is an angry book. I won't deny that at all. But it's also informative.
It's an eye-opening book, too. We're not trying to put anybody down or anything like that. We're just trying to give you the answers that you've been asking for. And sometimes the truth tends to hurt, and it sometimes gets on your nerves. But at the same time, it will make you think.
Well, this is the thing. Now, you said that it wasn't meant to hurt, but I find the book, the language of the book, not necessarily the things that you want to address, but I find the very tone of the book and the wording, the words that you use to address women in the book, it really is a form of self-hate. I mean, as black men and, you know, putting down black women in the manner that they are put down in the book with all of the just the foul language and things, I mean, that is a form of self-hate. And it is a little bit offensive. I'm wondering why the book had to be so angry, because it seems to me as if this book is not necessarily addressing the question. It seems more along the lines of it's just merely going off on black women. And to me, simply going off on a black woman is not going to really change what's going on, that if the book was probably less offensive, people would probably be more receptive.
Well, I mean, to say that,
Go ahead, Hank.
Well, contrary to that, we've actually gotten great responses off the book, and like I said, I've talked to women with ideas like yours as far as it being to the point where they couldn't finish it, but I've often found a lot of women that was that offended and was that, I guess, taken aback by the book's content and language. Well, a lot of times were women that were actually, that were this way, like the way we describe in all the different chapters.
in every chapter, there's a part of you. Not saying you in general, but you as far as something in there that black women can identify with. Either they act like that, they used to act like that, or they know black women who act like that. We want to get. What you say?
Go ahead.
It was also an attention getter. We knew that. I mean, every other book that's written in any kind of way has never gotten the attention that this book has. And I respectfully disagree with that as far as self-hatred. I don't hate black women. I don't hate myself. I love black women. I don't have any issues with them, but I have an issue with some of the behavior that some of them have. Not all of them, but just some. What were you saying, Jacquez?
Yes, I was saying we wrote it that way to grab, just like you said, to grab people's attention. Because when you say things in a nice way, a lot of times people tend to take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, they tend to shrug it off. But if we say it in the way that we say it, it will not only get your attention, but it'll also make you angry. And when something's angry makes you angry, you tend to think about it more. And then when you tend to think about it more, you tend to analyze what was being said, and maybe you could see the point that we were coming from. That's how a lot of women that we've met and spoke with, when they first saw it, they did get angry, but as they finished on through the book, they started to see where we came from, and they told us that after it was all over, they could really understand what we were saying.
Well, this is, you know, and, you know, I've heard what you have said, and I read the thing, and it was not I'm not necessarily saying that maybe what you wrote should have been sugarcoated, because I am not a person to sugarcoat anything as well, but to me, it's a bit of an overkill. It's almost as if, you know, you saw a cockroach and you shot it rather than step on it.
That's an interesting analogy, but, I kind of feel like, you know, I'll admit that I'm an extremist to a degree. I mean, that was my idea to write the book and to write it in the tone that it was in. I wanted to do something, you know, extremely different than anything that's ever been written. And I knew that with it being written in this context, that, you know, the message that we do give, you know, as Jacquez said, if there's a little bit of anger in there and it's making you angry, you'll tend to meditate on it a little bit more. But what I ask a lot of readers to do is I ask them to look past that, look past your anger, and look past the words that may offend you, and see the message that we're trying to make and the point that we're trying to make. You know, that's the ultimate point of this. You know, you have to be mature enough to look past the anger and in your issues.
Well, I mean, I can understand, you know, it definitely takes a mature reader to read the book, and I consider myself to be one, but it was still, I mean, it wasn't necessarily the fact that, you know, I could not just get 100% past it, but I don't know. I constantly came back to the question of why, as I was reading the book, I kept coming back to the same question, wondering why you guys were so angry.
Well, the anger... Go ahead, man.
I mean, it honestly was, because I kept having in my mind, and I use this statement all the time. I said, you know, you're angry like a stood-up prom date, like you were waiting at the door with your garage and your date never showed. Like that, you know, that's just the analogy that I constantly come back to when I'm talking about someone and relationships and being angry, and that was my question, you know, why so much anger? You know, if black women really have issues, let's help them, let's not yell. Like, yelling is not really going to solve anything. This book definitely yells.
Well, honestly, books have been out that, you know, books that have came out, you know, speaking on this particular matter, most authors, they haven't yelled. And they haven't been as blunt as we have or as raw as we have. And yet, it doesn't seem to do anything. It doesn't seem to anger you or get your attention or anything. But just like the way we spoke, it got your attention. And you feel like we were angry, but at the same time, I feel like the book did its job. Because now it kind of rubbed you the wrong way. So I think we're going in the right direction.
I mean, I don't know that if the book with me necessarily did the job that you wanted it to do with me. I really, I will I can't say that I can necessarily agree with that, but what was interesting to me in the week since I received the book and I've been at various venues and I've talked about the upcoming show, I have been extremely surprised by not necessarily a response from women, but I have been surprised by the response from men that I have received regarding the book. Because some of the guys that I have talked to about the book and even, you know, discussed the show and the topic, they seem to be a little bit more offended than the women were. And that in itself really did shock me.
Well, as I said, you know, this book is not, you know, it's not for everybody. And it's meant to be directed at a certain level of men and women that feel strongly this way. So mm-hmm. I knew from the beginning when I started this project that, you know, not everybody's going to agree with it. Not everybody's going to agree with how we wrote it, how we say it, and the context in which the words were used. And that was something that I accepted and agreed with. I personally have not met a man yet that was offended or that took, you know, a grievance with the book, because a lot of them were actually quite relieved, because I've had people, I've done speaking engagements, and I've had a lot of men come up to me and say, man, you know, you have really just said what I have been wanting and dying to say for like years, you know, to women, to my wife, to my girl. But I see your point and where you're coming from, you know, and I respect those guys' opinions and yours, but I have to respectfully disagree as far as, you know, did we not get a point across? I believe we got a very, very strong point across, in my personal opinion. I mean, the reviews were mixed, but I'd say about 70.
What is the point? Can I ask that question? What exactly, once this book is finished, what do you want people to walk away with?
I want them to walk away with a better perspective of why black men act the way they act. And the things that you do as a black woman, that some black women do, that can trigger a response from black men. You know, I wanted to, that's the ultimate message I wanted to send. I wanted to let them know that if you do A, you'll get this result B. You know, if you do C, you'll get this result D. Ultimately, that's what I wanted to show, and I wanted to show the issues that black women have that make men act this way. Because you may think, I put in the book also, you know, a lot of times, you know, black women are unconsciously doing it. They may be inadvertently doing something that they're not aware of. And I just wanted to bring all that to their attention. And that's ultimately what the book was about. Go ahead, Jack Williams.
And it was meant to answer a question. Was the way I look at it is if you can't take the answer that we give, don't ask the question. We've been asked this question all the time, and just because it's not the answer that you like, you don't want to hear it. We're telling you the truth. Because it's like, just like you said, you've met men that have been offended, and I'm like, Hank, I've not met one man that's been offended. They always say that, you know, you were right on point. I've been wanting to say this thing for years, and nobody's ever put it the way you all have, and I was really happy about it. So we're just trying to give you the answer. You ask why do men act this way. It may not be the answer that you like, but it's the truth.
What makes it the truth? That was my next question. What research or study or whatever did you do to write the things that you wrote in this book, or is this based solely on the relationships that you've engaged in?
They've been relationships. Go ahead. Go ahead, man.
We say in the book that we're not experts at all. We're just two regular guys that are given information from the experiences that we've had and experienced from other black men. Not to mention that black women always ask, why do black men continue to date outside their race? Do you know that there's a statistical fact that says that 70% of all black women are single or never been married? And it says that 70% of all interracial relationships involve black men. Now, why is this?
Now,
apparently,
see, I haven't heard that particular number. Now, me and Karen, the author was on just before, we were discussing that, and the number that she gave that said that 14% of black men are married interracially, that's the number that I've heard, because I actually did read that study for a show earlier this year. I haven't heard the one with a number that high.
Oh, no, you can honestly look it up. You can go anywhere. Go to yahoo.com, Google anything. Type in 70% of black women in America. Black women are single, and watch what comes up.
No,
the New York Post did a...
I'm talking about the men.
Hmm?
Go ahead.
Say that question again, huh?
No, I said I heard the one about the 70% of black women are single and had never been married, but I'm talking about the number of black men that are outside of their race. That number, I'm saying, I've never heard that one.
Oh, yeah. That's it falls under the same category. You can pretty much do the same thing with that. Type in 70% of black men are in interracial relationships, and you'll get just as many links with that as well.
Okay, I will definitely do that at the end of the show because I've never seen a number that high. But this is the thing. Now, I'm not saying that I disagree with everything that is in the book. That is not it by far. For me, as a writer and an educator as well, the language made it a little bit hard for someone like me to digest. But the thing that bothered me was the all in the notion that it's only black women who do these things. Because, you know, some of the things that were said, I do know, you know, black women who do these things just as well as I know white or Hispanic women who do the things. That was sort of the thing that sort of got me. It's the fact that I was being thrown into a category that I don't necessarily feel I belong in. It was the notion of the all and that it's only black women, or the, you know, the extreme emphasis on especially black women do these things.
Well,
that's why we put in, that in the book.
The introduction to the book
said that we're not speaking of all black women, just some. We didn't even say most. We just said some because there are some out there. And we also said that we're not putting any other race on a pedestal because we know they do these things as well. We're not just saying that just black women do it. This book isn't just made for black women. It's made for all women in general, because just like black women know women that act like this, I'm sure white, Latino, Asian women know women that act this way as well. So it's not just for black women.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as we said, you know, in the book, there are black women that you know who act this way, and there are some you know who don't. And the ones that who don't act this way, this doesn't apply to you. So I never understood. A lot of women were offended, and they said, "Well, I don't act that way." And this. Well, sweetie, what are you getting offended about then? If you know black women who act like this, then we encourage you to take this to them and explain. And if they still don't want to explain, send them to us. You know, let us talk to them. Like we said, we're not relationship experts. Like I said, we're two regular guys. We're not psychologists or anything. And I think that's honestly what's been missing from the literary world, is just a regular person's point of view or a regular person's perspective. I didn't want, you know, any doctor rhetoric or any big words, you know, psychoanalyzing this behavior, that behavior. Some things are just common sense, and some things you just got to be practical about. And that's where I wanted to come from with this book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, you addressed the fact, you know, I said that I was, you know, I didn't like the fact of the notion of sort of being thrown in, but, I mean, that's true for men as well. I mean, because I know in your introduction, you know, y'all discussed that women have been writing, you know, books and movies about how men are no good, you know, for the longest. And I would say that, you know, anyone who sort of feels like they're being thrown into that would sort of be offended to a certain degree, especially when you read some of the books that women write dogging men, because I don't agree with those either. I feel like people really need to take responsibility for the type of individual that they are dating. I always go back to the fact of, if you are always, you know, some women say, you know, every guy I meet is a loser. Every guy I date is a loser. And I'm wondering, well, that means that you're attracted to a loser. So that's something that you need to address with yourself, not necessarily
exactly
with the type of people. I am against, you know, the bashing on both ends. I feel like, okay, tell me what's wrong with me and now tell me how to fix it. But if you merely just tell me, well, you do this, this, and this wrong, and you never address a way to overcome it, to me, that's useless.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I agree with the fact that what you just said, and so I'm not dissing that in any way. You know, my issue is, and well, I guess the issues with everybody else that have read this book, the ones that were offended, was we actually give those answers, and, you know, they, like Daquia said earlier, they may not have liked the answer that they were given. And I've been in that situation, too. I mean, I've looked at situations where, you know, I've gone through a few females, and it's been like, what's the problem? I have to look at myself. And that's basically what we're doing with this book. Why can't I, you know, black women ask me, why can't I keep a man? Why does he cheat? Why does he do that? And then we answer that question, okay, this is what you're not doing. You're not, you're not talking to him. You're not letting him be himself. You're not letting him feel good about who he is as a person. You know, if he wants to tell you a secret or something, he's scared he may be judged or may be looked down upon. And you have to give him that freedom to be that kind of person he is. And that's what this book was ultimately about. And I understand, you know, the language was coarse and rough, and, you know, it didn't really, you know, it wasn't for everybody. A lot of people came to me and said, well, look, man, I like what you said, but I didn't like how you said it, but I agree with the point you tried to make. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, and that was sort of the response that I have had with the book, and that is sort of the thing because, you know, and this was honestly after the first question of wondering why the book was so angry, my second question was whether or not you feel as though what you wrote is something that you can 100% be proud of and stand behind considering, you know, your own ethnicity, because I always come back to, you know, is this something that you would, that you're okay with saying to your own daughter or to your own mother? I mean, any female relative that is in your life that is single, if this is that just because of how offensive some of the language is.
Yeah, I'm extremely proud of the way the way the book went, and I stand behind it 100%. I've always been this way from the jump street. It's not just something that I put in a book. This is the way I am with everyone I meet. I'm very straightforward, and if you ask me a question, I'm going to be a straight shooter. I'm going to shoot straight from the hip and give you exactly the answer that I have, even if you like it or not. So to answer your question, yeah, I'm very proud of how the book went, and I stand behind it 100%.
I'm proud as well. Now, I've actually had some clashing with some of my family members that have read the book that, you know, that were just completely, you know, appalled by it. And we've had discussions. We've had heated discussions as to why it was written like that. And I explained it to them. And some agreed once I explained it, and some didn't. And I respect, you know, their opinions. I still love them and my family. But ultimately, you know, I was led to write this book this way because it's never been written like this, and I truly believe, despite all of the negativity, some of the negativity that it's gotten much better response. It's gotten a lot better great responses than it has, bad responses. I stick by 100%, and I can truly say that I'm proud of the creation that we've made. Now, once again, as I've said, women like yourself and, you know, other women may not like it. That's fine. If they choose not to, you know, finish reading it or, you know, have their own issues with it, that's certainly okay. I invite people to contact me on Facebook, email me, any questions you have. I mean, I'm not easily offended. If you want to come unload on me or whatever, that's fine. So, I mean, I 100% stand by what I do. So,
we wrote it with the expectation that not everybody was going to agree with it. So this is not a shock to us. And at the same time, I like an objective opinion because if everything was all one-sided, it would be pretty boring anyway. So I'm saying that not everybody's going to agree with it. Nobody's going to like. I mean, not everybody's going to like it. Just like I said, personally, I haven't met any men that have had a problem with it. But you say you have. I'd also like to hear from them as well. You know, what issues did you have with it? And maybe we could sit down and speak it out rationally. And maybe I can show you where I'm coming from, and I can hear where you're coming from.
Okay, well, definitely do that. Very quickly before we wrap up, I do have, I'm sorry, those of you who are on the phone lines, that I have not been able to get to you. I was really trying to go ahead and get some of the questions addressed and answered, but I definitely want to take this caller. Last four digits of your number is 111. Good afternoon. You're on the air. This is Real Talk Radio. Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning. Is this me on the air?
Say what now?
Yes. Oh, okay, fine. I just didn't know. Look, this is Richard, and I would like to say, from what I've heard of the gentleman's book, it's very, very good, and I like it a lot, and I've recommended it. And I would also like for you to have said specifically what it was that offended you. You just seemed to talk around it. Also, I would like to say,
I said it was the language, because the language in the book is quite offensive. There's one part in the book where women are referred to as independent bitches.
Oh, okay, okay, all right. That's fine, because I wasn't clear on what, you know, it was, but I appreciate that. But the other thing I would like to say is this. One of the major answers to this problem is women participating in the dating process. In other words, they're initiating and being able to pay for dates. And I might also add that generally no one talks to women with truth. Women rarely hear the truth. And as a consequence of that, we're operating on opposite principles, as it were. Men and women are basically the same. They're just socialized differently and programmed for conflict. And obviously, we see that playing out here. So I applaud the gentleman for writing this book, and I just hope they could get great sales and it's continually promoted. But I think women need to hear how men really feel, and that's generally not the case. But anyway, thank you for your time, and have a wonderful, wonderful day. Keep me in the queue.
Thank you, Richard, for joining us. You are one of our regular listeners, definitely. I don't know. He said that women are not addressed, and I swear I can't turn on CNN without hearing that I am alone or...
Well, not to cut you off, Kim, but to answer your question, when you said you had a problem with the section that said independent bitches, we're not speaking about when you said you had the problem, that thing that kind of offended you when you read the section that was called independent bitches.
Well, it was just the language in general. You know, just some that was my issue with the book. Like I said, it wasn't necessarily content, but it was, you know, some of the things that were said, just the language. That's what I said over and over again. It was just sort of the language that was used that offended me.
Yeah, it's just like we said, with that section, we weren't referring to women as people. We were referring to their attitude, how they're acting. Well, that's what we mean when we say independent bitches. We're saying that, you know, when you're acting unapproachable and you're chasing men away and you're wondering why, just because you have a little success in your life, that's what we were speaking of. You are making yourself unapproachable, so you're acting like a bitch. That's what we were saying. We're not calling you one, saying that's what you are as a person. I just want to clear that up.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. Well, this actually is a question for both of you. But I'm sorry. I'm so ADHD. I got a little short. What happened to the third author? There are three names on the front of the book.
Jacquez, you're closer to him, so I'll let you explain that.
Okay. Well, actually, when we wrote the book, it was all three of us, and we all sat down, and the way the book came about is that we were sitting around, we were talking about different experiences we had had, and later on that night, Hank decided to come up with, we should write a book, and all of us came together, and we decided we were going to write notes on the book, and we finished with the product, we edited it all together, and he was all on board about doing it, and I don't think that he was serious. He seriously thought that we were going to actually put this out. So when it finally did come out and he saw the reality that there was a book in his hand, I believe fear gripped him that people were going to know the things that he said about black women. So he looked at it as, you know, he's an aspiring artist, and he's trying to get into the music industry. He said that if people get this got out, that black women would not, you know, support his music. So I looked at it as, why are you just looking at just black women to support your music? Don't you think that when this book is brought out, that if people find out that you were once a part of it and you bagged out, don't you think people are going to lose more respect for you because of that? So he literally decided that he wanted to be taken off the book because he didn't want people to know the things that he had said and he had wrote. So that's why he's not around. We recently just went through the process of having him removed from it. So now it's just myself and Hank.
Okay. So in the editions to come, his name will not be appearing on the book.
That is correct. Yeah. He said that... There was some conflict in that area. He said that he was appalled and offended, but, you know, he proofread it with us, so I never understood where that came from, but And I respect the man's wishes that to be taken off, but, you know, it was kind of a contradiction because he's saying, you know, I'm going to be a musical artist, and if, you know, this comes out and black women see this and such and such, I'm like, well, you know, what do you think they're going to say if it came out that you backed out on this? Because, and ultimately what you're saying is you don't want black women to know how you feel because you want them to spend money on your album. And, you know, but we argued the point for a while, but he ultimately said, no, I want out. So I respected his wishes. I wish him well in his music, in his music profession, and we've parted ways personally and businessly, but there's no ill will toward the guy, and, you know, I wish him well.
Okay, definitely. Yeah, I can agree with that. I definitely would say that I would have had more respect for him had he stood by what he said.
Yeah.
Because I am big on that. You know, if I said it, I can own it. And, you know, if you say it, own it. If you feel this way, own it. But definitely backing out, that is, and this is my opinion, that's a coward's move. You don't tuck tail and run. You know, you stand by whatever it is that you have said and done. You stand by it 100%. I just said this to my father-in-law the other night. You know, he's rooting for the Suns, and bless their heart, the Lakers are just smacking them, but he's standing by them. And I said, I can respect you for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, every man got to walk his own path. So I'm not gonna downplay the guy, nothing like that. So, you know, with that being said, you know, he's a cool guy. I got nothing against him, and I wish him well in his future endeavors. But I pretty much knew the outcome of this. You know, you're the first person to actually ask where the third author is, and now we told the truth and told him. I don't know how that's gonna play out as far as his music career goes, but I certainly wish him well.
Okay. Well, this is a question for both of you again. What did you learn about yourselves by writing this book?
I learned myself. I actually learned a lot of things about as far as how I felt, how angry I was about myself, and a lot of personal male friends that I've actually known that have gone through this. And I knew the response that I was going to get from a lot of black women that wanted to hear the truth but weren't ready for it. So I learned, I mean, there's a lot of courage. I mean, it took a lot of courage to write the way we wrote, because when we actually had rough draft copies sent out to men and women, man, it was like, you know, we was about ready to go boxing somewhere, man. We were just about to fight and everything else. And so I pretty much knew I was onto something. And so, you know, I learned myself to how much courage I actually had putting this book together and making it the way it sounds. And I could have gone the other way and, you know, been politically correct and nice and sugar-coated, but I don't think personally black women would have learned anything. You know, they wouldn't have looked within themselves. They wouldn't have took it as seriously, because I think people that, not putting down comedians or anything, comedians tend to tell truth in a lot of their comedic acts, but the problem is it's watered down in humor. So you tend to laugh and you kind of say, yeah, you nod your head and that's the truth, but in that laughter, the message is somewhat lost. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, you know, I didn't want any of that. I wanted to just literally be as raw as I could, take the humor out, take the jokes out, take and get serious and get to the root of the matter. And this is why this black man does not like you, does not want you. Not because he hates you, but because this is what you're not doing right. That's ultimately what I wanted to do, and that's what I learned about myself, you know, my own flaws and issues and my own shortcomings as well. That's what I learned from it.
Well, I learned that I'm not the only one that feels this way. You know, sometimes when you don't express yourself in these ways to certain people, you feel like you may be alone. But when we put this out and so many people rallied around us, men and women, you finally understand that you're not the only one that feels this way, and there's nothing wrong with you. It's just things that have happened going on, and you're not by yourself. We also had, when we put it so raw, people love it, but when we send it to, like, book agents and stuff and try to get it, you know, in the major distribution. I've had agents tell me all the time, you know, that the book is great. They love it. They think it's a very compelling and interesting read, but they honestly wouldn't know how to market it. They wouldn't know how to go about presenting it to a publisher because it's so raw and in your face. So we looked at it as, you know what, we'll just have to do it ourselves. I've learned that I've got a lot of determination, and just like you said, you have to have a lot of strength, and you have to have leather skin to take the blows and the backlash that come behind it. So I've learned that, hey, you grit your teeth, and you have to jump in there and
make things happen.
Yeah, definitely. That is one of the things. And definitely, I think that, and I feel this way about it, anytime you write something that you are extremely passionate about and you put it into print, personally, I feel as though it is better to do it yourself because you are passionate about it. And one of the things that you experience with publishers is that they're not passionate about what it is that you're saying, what it is that you're passionate about. And so they will definitely want to cookie cutter your
yeah.
work so that it is a little bit more presentable to the public or, you know, marketable. And that is one of the things that the art is not about. Writing is a form of art. That's how I view it. And so art
yeah,
is not
I agree.
Cookie cutter. So the integrity of your book was saved by that, and I can definitely see what the agent was saying, but that would go with anything that is extremely controversial or something that is very different. Now, I have this new show that is starting soon, and one of the radio personnel for the show, listening to her segment yesterday, she made the comment about black men are always complaining about independent women, and her take on it was that any man that is offended by an independent woman obviously is not confident in his own right and would then prefer a weaker-minded woman. What would your response be to her?
I'll say that, you know, that's her opinion, you know, she's welcome to it, but I completely disagree with that. The way I look at it is I don't think that men, black men or any man in particular, is offended or intimidated by an independent woman. I think that we're just tired of it being thrown in our face, let's put it that way. The way I look at it is that true independence and true strength is exuded. It's not proclaimed. What I mean by that is that you don't always have to tell people how strong I am. You know, I'm independent. I can do this. I can take care of myself on my own. It'll radiate from you through your actions and your personality. I don't have to hear it all the time. When you're always saying it, it screams insecurity. It says, who are you trying to convince, me or yourself? That's what we get tired of dealing with. We have no problem
that's
with
like,
you being able to get the things that you have.
That's like saying, you know, that's like me going around saying, you know, I'm the man. Respect me. I pay the bills and I do such. I'm like, okay, you do regular things that everybody else does, you know. And I agree with you. I agree with you on that state that there are some men out there that are offended by independent black men because they don't have their own selves together because, you know, success holds up a mirror of your failures. And so there are some black men that are, you know, offended by it and turned off by it. But ultimately, that's not what we were getting at. It's the attitude that comes along with having your own money, your own car. It's no different from a guy that's rich and has millions or billions of dollars and has all these material things, and he's arrogant and he's self-centered and he's full of himself. You know, it breaks the attraction. You don't care how good he is, how good-looking he is, how nice a body he has. If he has an effed-up attitude like this, you're like, you know what, man, you know, screw you. Go be somewhere. That's exactly the point we're getting at. We're not downing women for being independent and having your own house, your own car. Those things are great. I encourage women to go get your own things. Don't depend on anybody for nothing. But don't change your attitude in the process. Don't ever think that you don't need anybody. You know, you don't ever hear men saying, well, I don't need no woman to do such and such. I mean, why are black women saying this? Because ultimately you're going to get what you speak into existence. I don't need a man. I don't need a man. I don't want a man. I ain't thinking about a man. Okay, you ain't got a man. And ultimately that's because you kept saying that. And so that would be my response to her.
Well, you know, I can agree with some of what you said because, like I said before, I am not into the bashing at all because a few months back I was at a poetry slam because I do poetry as well, and there was this stream of women who were there. Everybody was talking about how they basically it was I hate men poems. That's what I like to call it. It was the I hate men series.
Yeah, I'm a poet,
and,
so I've heard them, yeah.
And I was sitting there, and I was like, really? And I was thinking to myself, I was like, I don't know why these women are saying all of these things. I was like, you know, I can't relate to that at all. I was like, because I can't wait to go home and have the weight of a man on top of me. I can't relate to what they're saying. And
I mean, that is just 100% my feeling about that. And, you know, uh-huh. And I can definitely agree with the whole I don't need this and I don't need that, because I will say that one of the things that I remember very early on my dad always telling me was, he was like, don't ever put yourself in a position to where you need a man to do, to take care of you. He's like, don't be in that position. He said, you have a man in your life because you want him, and that he contributes things that you can't necessarily give to yourself emotionally.
Exactly.
He's like, don't, you know, as far as needing one to pay your phone bill, he's like, don't do that. And that is sort of how I have viewed it, but I can relate to what you're saying, because I do know individual women who use their independence as sort of their badge of honor. You know, they want to broadcast that they bought their own house, and they want to broadcast that, you know, they bought their own car and all of those things. And I'm, to me, it's sort of like a given. You know, if you are an adult and you work, it, to me, it's a given that you pay your bills and you buy things for yourself. So I don't really know why necessarily to broadcast it.
Yeah, we don't get points for, you know, for paying our bills and paying the note and paying the car. I mean,
that's what you have to do anyway.
Exactly. I mean, you're a grown-ass man, grown-ass woman. You don't get no cookie for that. You know, it's called being responsible. So why are they out here shouting this independence? Just like, you know, men in the club bragging about what they have. You know, I got to come approach you in the club shaking some car keys in your face. How insecure is that? And that's basically what we're talking about in the book. You see what I'm saying? That's basically what we're doing, you know. And that's where we were coming from with that.
Well, I have to say, now, the thing that I did sort of laugh about was the sexual stinginess.
Uh-huh.
I had to laugh about that. And my sister-in-law always tells me that she makes a joke all the time that I am not a woman, because I never understand some of the things that she say and some of the concepts. And so I did laugh about that, because I personally have always been the one who's never understood I'm not in the mood or I have a headache.
Exactly.
Makes you forget that you're tired, and it gives you endorphins, like it's exercise. Endorphins, you know, give you energy
exactly.
and make you happy. But I did laugh about that in the book, because I was thinking, I was like, yeah, I do know some of each that are sort of that way, and that personally I've never been able to relate to.
You know, things like that, when women get into those traps or fall into those categories, and then when he goes astray and finds, you know, somewhere else, something else, then they're sitting there wondering, I can't believe this happened. Well, but a lot of times when people cheat, and this goes for men and women, a lot of times when people cheat, a lot of times you got to check yourself. What did I do wrong? Now, sometimes it's not your fault at all. Maybe he's just a dog, or maybe she's just a bitch that just didn't want to act right. You know, so... But a lot of times you have to check yourself, like, you know, was I giving him what he needed sexually? Was I giving her what she needed sexually? Was I paying attention? Was I doing these things? And I think that's where a lot of women drop the ball, because I've said this before to so many women, men are so simple. We are simple to the point that we're damn near primitive. It doesn't take much. I mean, all these books about how to please a man by women, and it's 400 pages, it only needs to be about two or three. You know, that's
it. So simple it bothers you. You just can't understand that somebody would be this easy to deal with. You've got to be more going on.
Okay.
I mean, you got to find out what he likes, what he's into, and then if you're not into that, that's fine. Let him go, and you find somebody else. But when you do, you find out what he likes, and the key is repetition. Whatever you start, you got to finish. So there's no, as Chris Rock said, there's no one time. You know, doing something. If you do a girl once, you're going to have to keep doing a girl. If you wear this nasty outfit, you know, you're going to have to keep wearing this nasty. I mean, there is no one time, and you know, when it's over, and I won't ever do this again, or I'll do it in 5 or 6 years. You're going to lose your man that
just
way.
Just like
honey.
We said, it also falls down to the man and woman being honest with each other, too. A lot of times a man or woman will hold back what they like sexually out of fear of being belittled or ridiculed about what it is that they like. You need to be straightforward with your woman or your man and tell him what you're into, everything that you're into. Don't hold anything back, because if you all get this off the table, on the table right away, if she's not into it or he's not into it, you guys can leave each other alone and not waste each other's time. Because, and then another thing I feel that women should do, because women are more guilty of this than men are, when a man is open enough to tell you the things that he likes and that he's into, don't make him feel ashamed for what it is that he likes. He's trusting you enough to open up to you, and then you're going to down him for it. Now he's going to regret opening up to you, and he's never going to do it again. And then, in turn, he's going to turn around and go cheat with somebody else that won't ridicule him or belittle him for what he likes.
Okay. Yeah, I can agree with that, but I guess in a sense, it comes back to the thing that is said over and over again, that communication is the key. And I am one who likes, I am a very verbal person, and I feel like, you know, honestly, you really should communicate better if you start out and you're into this woman and she is not responding in a manner that is favorable to you. I definitely feel as though it should be addressed, and how you address it, I guess, is ultimately up to you and what type of response you are hoping to receive from the woman. And if she is not receptive to the information that you are giving her to hopefully fix whatever the little stumbling block is, then it's time to strike a match and start over. I mean, and that goes
exactly
for women as well. Everybody has to learn to communicate with each other.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's ultimately what the book is about. The book,
you know,
whether it pisses you off or makes you upset or sad or anything, the ultimate goal of the book is to get people to talk. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about our feelings. Let's talk about our fears. Let's talk about what makes us angry. There's so much anger in black men and women, but everybody is scared to say why, because out of fear of being judged or being belittled. But there's, you know, nothing is trivial in a man or a woman's life. And if these little things matter to him, it's important. And the same thing with women. And so that's ultimately what it's about. It's about getting people to open up and communicate. And if I have to piss you off to do it, then so be it. That's why I ultimately wrote the book the way it was written. So, I mean, that's where it honestly came from, the motivation.
And just like you said, with it being wrote that way, it got us talking, because I feel like that's why I say I feel like it's done its job, because it's got people talking about it, whether you talking about you ate it or you're talking about you love it. The point is, you're talking about
it. Well, if that was the ultimate mission, then it has been achieved, because you always want to hook your reader from the jump, and definitely the title and the introduction is a hook.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to thank both of you for joining me this afternoon. It's afternoon where you are now in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yes,
come to Atlanta anytime soon, I won't be in Atlanta very much longer, but if you come to Atlanta or any other time, if there's a sequel to Why Black Women Are Alone or anything else along that line, you definitely need to look me up and let me know.
Oh, we definitely will.
If anybody would like to get a copy of Why Black Women Are Alone, it can also be found at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, or it can be found at Borders.com. But if you don't want to order the hardback copy, you can get the e-book from our website, WhyBlackWomenAreAlone.com, for only $5. You just call, and you get online and you order it, and we'll send it out to you that day, and you'll have a copy of it.
And download it to
WhyBlackWomenAreAlone.com.
Your iPad, your book, your Nook.
Your Nook, anything.
Okay.
You can get it this moment, so.
And I have it also, it is on the show page for today's segment, so anyone who's listening, you want it, there, the book is on the show page. All you have to do is actually click on the picture, and it takes you to a link that lets you purchase the book, or you can go to the websites or any other stores. If you're in Memphis, Tennessee, I guess you might even have the option of getting an autographed copy. But it is definitely an attention grabber, interesting book. I'm reading another book as well, the author that was on before y'all. So my goal is to have both books finished by the end of the week. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that I can finish it. And I will definitely be contacting both of you once I finish the book, so that we can end the discussion.
All right.
Well, you all have a wonderful afternoon. Thank you for joining me on Real Talk Radio.
Thank you for having us.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for having us. You have a good day, sweetie.
You too. Thanks.
All right.
Uh-huh.
So this is the end of Real Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. I am your host, Kay Sherrell, America's favorite Southern Belle. Join me next week when we talk to Larry Jameson Jr. About how to make it and getting a job in any economy. You have been lovely. I love you. See you next week.